Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everybody, I just want to give you a quick content warning for a discussion of self-harm, homophobia, and transphobia during a discussion of The Missing, which starts at about 57, 58 minutes, somewhere in there, and goes until around an hour and 17, hour and 18, hour and 19 minutes. I can't give you a specific number because the ads in our podcast are added algorithmically, which means you might get 30 seconds or 90 seconds of ads, or you might get 0 seconds of ads, and that will determine the timestamp. But again, from about 57 minutes to about an hour and 18 minutes is when the content warning is. So enjoy. What's good, internet? It is Monday, November 25th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 205. I am your host, Austin Walker, and joining me today, Danielle Riendo.
Hi, hello.
And Patrick Kleppen coming to us from...
What a shit show. You're lucky I'm even here. You should be grateful, Waypoint audience, I made it to this podcast.
What a shit show. What happened? What's going on?
It's snow outside. I love snow. I love winter, but... Man, so last night...
Are you saying we should be grateful that you're not out frolicking in the beautiful, crisp, white snow?
Well, no, because it out here, it was warm enough. So a foot of snow came down in a lot of parts of the Midwest. Out here, It was just warm enough in the morning for it to rain for the first 3 hours of that. And then it turned to slush and then turned to snow. And then now the roads and everywhere is just a mixture of all three of those. And last night, when I should have been just... really enjoying whether, do I want the Vikings to lose? Do I want the Packers to lose? They're fighting each other. I win either way. Like, just a joyous moment in which the pain and misery of so many years comes to this moment where I can watch these creatures beneath me fight for scraps. moments away from the end of the fourth quarter, like, as I'm sipping my bourbon, just, and like, full house. You know, it goes out. It's used to snow. Like, snow is not a big deal. That doesn't usually knock your power out unless it's like a really freak storm. But this one happened to have just a ton of wind associated with it. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the kind of howling wind where, like, I heard it knocking against the house. But once I, like, went and, like, opened a door and was just like, oh, that seems really gnarly out. And then my wife comes out. She'd just gone to bed. And all of a sudden, she's like, look at the sky. And we, like, look in the sky, and we just see these big sparks. And then, like, sparks on, like, both sides of the block, where, like, I don't know if it was a transformer or if it was power lines. But, like, it was either an alien invasion.
Or aliens,
I described it to Austin as this was happening in real time.
Yeah, that's what I'm...
It was, like, either aliens are coming down, which is cool, right? Like, confirmation of extraterrestrial life.
Finally.
Like, I'm into it. Like, the alien alloys are here. They knew I was talking about them. and then, like the power was out, and then naturally your power is connected to your heat, which means our heat was out all night. Thankfully, the water heater had enough that we were able to take a shower in the morning, and then my kids' daycare was closed for the first couple hours. It's a lot, but I'm here.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Glad we found you. We brought you in from the cold, from the snow.
It's not even that cold, which is even the worst because it's probably going to start melting and turn into ice for like the next week. And
I hate that.
That's actually the worst thing. That is the worst possible thing. Like I know that we have differing opinions on this call about the winter.
Mm-hmm. We sure do.
You are an anti-winter person. I like being bundled up. I like being in nice coats and sweaters. I'm a fall winter person more than a spring summer person. I like the spring, but fall is my favorite, and winter can be closer to fall than summer can be to fall. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Let me pause at this. Yeah. What if you were a summer fall person?
No such thing.
That's me. I exist. I'm here and I'm valid.
I am a summer fall person. You're valid.
Thank you.
but I could not be a summer person because I've said this before. There's a point at which with heat, there is no way to get cooler.
Whereas with cold, I can always put on another fucking layer. I can always crawl under another blanket. I can always turn the heat up a little bit more. I can't do
medically
that.
Medically speaking, that's not true.
Of course it's not true. But 105 degree day, it feels true. It feels like I'm in a cold shower and I'm still hot. I'm naked in a cold shower. I'm still hot. What is going on? I can't live like this. That is the experience for me in summer, especially in New York summers, which are like can get really rough. They're not the roughest summers I've ever been to, but they're pretty rough. Regardless, I'm deep in the winter summer debate.
I mean, I enjoyed the first 5 minutes of shoveling snow, and then I realized I had another 20.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. The thing that I don't like is ice. That's the one thing that I can concede about winter
sucking. Yeah, ice is bad. Skating on it.
And even then, that feels dangerous. There's a lot of things about ice skating that scare me as a person. You have blades on your feet.
Yep.
What if? That's my question. Just what if?
Anything could happen. I get a lot of really, really depressing calls in the winter.
I bet you die
a lot faster in the cold than the heat. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I believe that. Yeah. That makes sense. I'd rather die in the cold than the heat, though. I really would.
Yeah?
You would eventually go numb
in the cold, right?
Yeah.
So like your body.
Sometimes actually have paradoxical, like severe hypothermia can actually be paradoxical. People will take their clothes off. They'll feel hot and take their clothes off and be like, I'm so hot. Mm. And they have like necrotic tissue and it's terrible.
Bodies suck.
Bodies are terrible.
IMO. I'm ready to move on. You know, fuck the, you know, Ray Kurzweils of the world and all that, but. You know, fuck me up, fam. Make me a cyborg. Let's go.
How about bodies that are just better?
Better bodies.
Just like fix some of the better problems. Bodies.
Can cyborgs take showers?
Cyborgs can take showers. Cyborgs take showers.
Do they feel the sensation of the shower though?
It depends on what upgrade package.
There's a specific skin sensation upgrade.
Oh, 100%.
Is that part of the new modern cyberpunk?
100%. 100%. We should talk about video games. It's what people are here for, and not us taking showers. That's probably not the direction we should be going.
I don't know. There's probably a small subset of the audience. There is absolutely. Come on, it's the internet.
I'm aware. You know, it's been a holiday weekend for us here in the States, and so we're all, I think, a little punchy. We're all just waking up. We're all just getting our faces back on. But we can talk about a video game, right? The video games are coming out. Patrick Klepek, talk to me. Okay, do you not want to go? Do you not want to talk to me about Darksiders 3?
Would you like to play a Darksiders fan game?
Yo, that's rude.
I was trying. I played the first 4 or 5 hours of Darksiders 3. I truly adored the first game. I thought it was, I think when it was characterized as, it's a violent Zelda game, which is true, but it wasn't edgelord. It was, but in like a very genuine, fun way.
It felt like a 90s comic in a big way to me.
And it was very much celebrating all that was, as opposed to, I don't know, there was just something, it was a very charming, authentic game that I was also very well designed. It had like big, bright colors, very super interesting environments, great puzzles, great world design. It was at a time when Zelda was not that interesting. Like, came at the Skyward Sword era, which there are parts of Skyward Sword that I liked quite a bit, but Skyward Sword is like 3 games worth of content, but there's like 1 good game in there, but you have to sort through the other 2 games to get there. And so Darksiders came around that same time and was a game that like, just like, hey, like what if, it felt like Zelda fans making a good Zelda game when Nintendo wasn't making the Zelda games that people wanted, or wasn't going in like a transcendently different direction like Breath of the Wild, just like, hey, we're going to take what you like, but we're going to do it in a different context, and it's still going to be really interesting and still feel like Zelda. And so Darksiders comes into that place and is a genuinely great game. Ends on just like one of the greatest video game endings of all time, I think, in which like you play as one of the 4 horsemen of the apocalypse, and then the ending of the game is like all the other horsemen coming in, and like it's supposed to be like a big bang, like this is going to be the sequel, and you're all going to be the 4 of them, and it was just a really badass way to like, you had an arc, but also like a really, it was a good cliffhanger. It was a good way to like set up a sequel that didn't feel like it was cheating you out of a story. It was more just like, you were excited to see what happened next. Right. I didn't care for the sequel, which in which you played Death. It was more of a, it was still kind of a Zelda-ish action adventure game. It was very loot focused. I don't think the loot stuff worked at all. It was not interesting to me. I thought the level design was less interesting. It was just, it didn't take place at the spot you thought you wanted. Like, you think, oh, the end
right,
of the game.
Right, it was a prequel. Yeah, it's it a prequel. It was sort of like, yeah. While War was doing blank, yeah. Death was doing this other thing.
Correct.
Right?
Which just felt or like a very, like very misguided take Death on, like, where yeah. people wanted that franchise to go next. And so, but a lot of people did dig. It's not a bad game. It was just not really what I wanted, and a bunch of the things didn't really work for me. And there's been a long gap in between 2 and 3. The core team that worked on the first two work with, what was that RPG they put out last year? The
oh,
Battle.
Did they do that?
It was on Switch. Joe Maderero. I don't know how to pronounce.
Oh,
his name.
Oh, that was them. Oh boy,
Battle Ooh, something, right?
Oh my God,
THQ
was it
Nordic?
Battle Chasers? No. Battle Chasers.
Battle Chasers.
Battle Chasers.
Yes. Battle Chasers.
I didn't realize that was that team.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's not the you know well the team kind of split off in a couple different directions.
Gotcha.
But the comic artist that worked on Darksiders, again, I'm mispronouncing his last name, Joe M. We'll call him Joe M so I can stop butchering it.
Yeah. Often called Joe Mad.
Yeah, sure. That works too. Yeah. Battle Chasers, I guess, was, you know, one of the an old comic he had worked on that they reworked into this, like, charming JRPG type thing. I didn't finish it, but I enjoyed, like, the 10 hours I played, and it's something mm-hmm. I keep thinking, like, I should go back and finish that. And then, from what I understand, a different set of team members, I don't know the exact lineage, you know, we're a new team working on this Darksiders 3. This one involves Fury. It also seems to be concurrent with the first game, like when the first invasion of Earth happens between heaven and hell. But yeah, so to circle back around to my original point, like it's very bland. It's pretty boring. It feels like a B game in the bad way. Like when, oh boy, like I was trying to come up with comparisons where I was like, remember there were like a lot of like character action or character platformer games like Tie, like 3D ones, like Tie the Tasmanian Devil. Do you like remember that? Like Tie,
Croc.
There's a lot of games like that. This feels like a game of that era. It feels like very PS2-ish.
Okay.
And on top of that, in terms of being like a Darksiders fan, I was trying to find a metaphor to like, or a way to like describe how I felt about it. And the notion of it being a Darksiders fan game in which if I saw a YouTube video where it's like, yo, a team loved Darksiders and they're making their own Darksiders game, you'd look at this and go, damn, like this is really impressive for a bunch of folks just like scrapping right. it together. But for like
the, which is what it is to some degree,
like,
right?
It is possible that in some ways that is true because who knows what the budget, the team, like,
yeah.
Well, if I'm judging it without any reporting, but judging it purely aesthetically and technically, because mm-hmm. this game is a technical mess, like you are clipping through objects all the time. As you just rotate the camera, the geometry is kind of popping in and out in like really weird ways. It feels very budgety, in which although I can't back that up with like actually knowing how it was built, what the resources they were given, it does feel like a game in which we're going to try and... So when we've talked about like B games in the past, part of what makes them charming is often that they have ambitions that stretch beyond their budget. This doesn't feel like a game that has ambitions beyond its budget. It just doesn't feel like it has many ambitions and it didn't have a budget.
Like it's making one of these and we know what one of these is.
Yeah, it's so like one of these, and then like a not, like it's like, oh, it's like Devil May Cry-ish. It's sort of Zelda-ish, but it's like not a good version of any of those. And it's not like playing with some like unique systems or ideas that it's like, okay, even though this isn't really working, it doesn't have the money to pull this part off. The rest of it is like, oh, this is interesting to make me keep going. Like, there's none of that so far. Like, it's just it's a mediocre brawler. The world is just...
Oh, buddy.
Like, you're on Earth, but... And you land in a city, but there's no character to it at all. Like, there's signs that say, like, when you go on a subway, it's like, stadium, state house. Oh. But there's no, like, label of, like, am I in New York? Am I in Chicago? Right. Am I in D.C.? Like... this is supposed to...
You're in city. You're in...
Earth City,
yeah.
And, you know, in addition to that, like, exactly. They try to set it during an interesting time point where it's like, this is right after the invasion happened, so, like, society is supposed to be crumbling around you. And so there could be an interesting sort of setup where it's like, oh, right, like, where the humans have no role in this whatsoever in the past because they're kind of dealing with, you know, kind of like DC character, demigod, like, sort of characters that are coming down and just rumbling around. maybe the humans could play some role. And instead, all that the humans have is that, like, there's a place for them to go, and you get a little doodad that you can, like, zap on a human that you find behind a hidden wall, and then they're safe, I guess.
Human collectibles.
Yeah, but it doesn't appear to, like, help you. And, like, it doesn't seem like I'm getting upgrades, so I'm not sure why I'm helping the humans.
You're helping people. Just because it's good to help people, Patrick.
The character you're playing, Fury, the one woman of the Four Horsemen, like, she's begrudgingly helping the humans. She does not like the humans, does not want to help them. So it's really only the player role-playing a version of Fury that begrudgingly wants to help the humans. And she's not, like, getting stat upgrades for her character in the process. I'm going to continue playing this, but I'm profoundly disappointed both, I say primarily as a Darksiders fan, where I've waited a long time for a third entry, and then even secondarily where it's like, maybe you like Zelda-ish games, or maybe you just like, there aren't that many games like this which are these B-level games that are sometimes interesting for X, Y, or Z reason. This game, at least 4 hours in, has none of those qualities, and it's just a bummer.
It is, you know, it's one of those things where every time I saw this game in previews, whether it was at a PAX or, you know, IGN did a big reveal feature for it, I was very much like,
yeah,
you know, sucking breath in through my teeth and being like, please, like, turn the corner. Every game looks rough in development.
Yep.
And it always comes together in those last steps. It's a thing you learn, it's a thing you know from talking to developers. And, like, maybe it's just not showing well, and it's a bummer to hear.
It's not this is not always true, but it's not usually a good sign. So, like, I don't know how codes went out to different outlets, but, like, just like to, like, reveal the, you know, behind the curtain a little bit, that I got code for this on last Wednesday, and this game comes out tomorrow. So that's, like, a really quick turnaround for what is a, like, THQ Nordic's premiere release. You know, like, since they've been a company, probably, like, this is like they've done lots of smaller things, but, like, this is like the biggest thing that they've done.
Is it?
What would be bigger than this?
I guess.
Yeah. This is kind of a name, right?
It is a name. You're not wrong. I guess so.
And so it's not uncommon to get code very quickly before release for lots of bigger games, especially because games come in so hot. But this very much struck me as you didn't see a lot of publicity for this game. It wasn't showing well. It felt like it was kind of getting buried. Like, that maybe they realized, like, we don't want this to necessarily be, like, our foot forward as, like, this is THQ Nordic. And that gave me some red flags personally, like, from just having done this for a long time. And then by the time when I started playing it, I was like, oh, I think they saw what I saw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Danielle, you had something earlier. Yeah.
Oh, just out of curiosity, let me ask you, as, like, a pretty big Zelda fan who even likes the crappier Zeldas just because that progression is fun, just that sort of, like, going through a dungeon is fun, going through an overworld is fun, you know, that whole kind of thing. Is it scratching the itch at all? Is it competent in some ways? Because I know, you know, certainly there's a case to be made for the, like, comfort food, you know, a game that may not be super ambitious, but it covers the bases of a genre 100%. That you don't see as often. Is it scratching that at all, or
it scratches it in that, like, it knows that you have an itch, but, like, like, maybe when it got the clippers out, like, it just went a little too far, and actually, like, it went the kind of far where, like, you now have to spend 2 days waiting for your nail to grow back enough so that, like, you don't have that sore spot. You know, you've done that before, right, where you just clip, like, a little too close,
a little too much, and it's like, ow.
Yeah,
and every time you kind of, like, press it again, you're like, I wish I could scratch myself, but I can't. I don't have a nail. That's what this game wants to scratch your Zelda itch, but it don't got no nail.
I hate this. Gotcha. This is a torturous scenario here. I mean, anytime it's like, oh yeah, you have an itch, you can't scratch it. Ugh.
I mean, so, like, just even, like, the way it sets up its world in the most basic ways, you know, where, like, it's very common in a Zelda game where, like, you'll enter an area and then you'll see, like, something you can't, like, hello, Norm. That's my mom's dog. I'm podcasting in an unideal environment, so you might hear some
lots
dog
of dogs,
noises.
Lots of dogs on the bat in the background.
It's all good. And like, that's supposed to, like, kind of, like, pique your curiosity, right? Where it's like, oh, like, I wonder how I get over there. Like, I wonder how I access that thing. And this game is just so, like, I turned a corner and there was just, like, a tornado in the air. But, like, no, the game doesn't, like, acknowledge it. It's not like the character goes like, interesting, or I guess it's just there and you can't do anything. You just can't reach it. And you just like, there's no acknowledgement or like,
right.
Even one of the barriers to like get into one of, an area that's crossed off. It's just spider webs. Like I'm a demigod. I'm like some creature of the universe. And it's just like,
yeah,
it's not even stone. It's just like, I can see it wafting in the wind. And it's like, my character's main weapon is a whip. Like just lady, take out your whip.
Just
and
whip
hit
that shit.
Stuff.
Whip it. Yeah.
And I realize that stuff is always completely arbitrary. That is part of the gambit. Like that's just accepting the sort of the norm of the, that type of game, but it just doesn't even do stuff like that well. And so just sort of top to bottom, it just feels, it's just boring. And like, I'll probably play more cause I'm now curious to see the depths of its averageness or sub averageness because I just kind of like want to see where that goes from here. Like what if maybe this is only like a 7-hour game? Like, I don't know. Like, you know, I want to know in totality, like what this thing is to know how to better think about it. But if you are a Darksiders fan, if you are a Zelda fan, who's like, oh, we have enough distance from Breath of the Wild where we're in that in-between space where, like, they're making another Zelda, but that game's probably 3 years away.
2 years
right?
out, yeah. It's killing me.
And you know.
It's fine.
And, like, they've done enough DLC where it's like, they're probably not going to do another DLC. So you're looking for, like, you know, I was lucky this year. It's like Astrobot for PlayStation VR seemed to scratch like I want another
Mario.
Nintendo Mario game. Like, and that successfully did it, right? Like, it was doing different things, but 100%, it's like, if you want a new Mario game, Astrobot is the closest thing, and it's a tremendous game. Darksiders, if you want a new Zelda game, like, it's, I'm hard-pressed to imagine it's going to turn some magical corner a couple more hours in.
But if it does, you let us know, because that would be an achievement.
It would, and I'm going to play more. I'm going to finish it, because I'm just curious in a morbid sort of way to see where it ends up. But if you're a Darksiders fan, like, I don't know if I'd be running out to, like, I don't just like to get into the, should you pay a full price game? But like, yo, like, this game's not going to be full price in a couple of weeks, probably.
So I do want to give a little context on the THQ Nordic thing because I've dug into
it. Are you looking at the Wikipedia page?
Computer. Not just that, but like their page and a bunch of other stuff. I'd say that you're right that this is their first, like, big name game in terms of like they have a name. I think Wreckfest ended up being sort of a surprise for some people on PC, which was from I don't remember what the set of devs was, but previous, I don't think it was Burnout devs, but something in that similar vein.
Destruction,
you know,
Derby?
What I mean?
Yeah. Would that be a one?
Maybe Destruction. It could have been Destruction Derby devs. They did the publishing for Sunset Overdrive on PC, but that's not the same thing. And then it's a lot of like Desperados and Hunter Call of the Wild and Titan Quest. I don't know if they published, maybe that was a specific thing, or lots of like, you know, Elix and you know, Spellforce 3 and lots of European and Eastern European specifically RPGs and stuff like that. But I will say that the thing to remember is that one of the things THQ did over the last few years is start buying up other things. THQ Nordic. I just said THQ like they were old school THQ. But so, for instance, the thing to remember is that like they bought all the Koch Media stuff, including Deep Silver stuff.
Yep.
And so like Metro is going to ship without. It's not going to say, it might not say THQ Nordic on it, though at this point they might just slap that on there. It might say it's a Deep Silver game, but that is also owned by THQ Nordic, which makes it a little more complex. Or like they shipped, Deep Silver shipped Kingdom Come Deliverance this year, which was a huge success, an outsized success. We talked about this on a past episode. None of us played it. But
did they fund it or they just distribute it?
They own the publisher.
Oh.
So the publisher was Deep Silver. Though I don't know what the specific deal was in that case. Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe that is just a distribution deal. I'm not sure. But coming up soon, 2019, Deep Silver, Shenmue 3. So that's their next big chance. Love Metro, Deep Silver,
well,
Metro
just,
this
but,
year.
And at that point, I doubt that they're funding it. They're just taking a cut off the top and then, like, taking advantage of, like, THQ Nordic having a distribution network. They,
exactly.
Like, increasingly, I'm trying to find like an analogy for this company. Like, is THQ Nordic like the Blumhouse of like they're going
yes.
like put
yeah.
out like they're
Maybe.
Not going to put a lot of budget behind their projects, but it's like a high risk, high reward situation. And then occasionally you get one that has like more of a budget, like a Get Out or something like that.
Yeah. In this case, though, it was Darksiders 3, which
yeah,
that's a shame. So it goes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, good luck to them. I hope that game turns a corner for you at some point, Patrick. Danielle, can you lighten my mood? Can you bring me anything that makes me happy after Patrick's Darksiders disappointment?
I have a delightful game to bring to the table. Let's say, it's after Thanksgiving. Everybody's already sick of leftovers. Yeah, maybe you want something a little bit light, a little bit fresh, like a fruit salad.
You can get
like
sick of leftovers?
I'm out of leftovers at this point.
Well, being out of them and being sick of them are two different things, Danielle Riendo.
That's true. Let me let you feast upon this delightful treat called The Haunted Island, a frog detective game.
That's a great title, first and foremost. The Haunted Island, a frog detective game?
Yes.
Perfect.
This is from Grace Bruxner, who has made many, like, very small games on itch.io. But, like, when I say small games on itch.io, that can mean a million things.
Yeah, what's that mean?
It can mean literally somebody's very first, you know, project they've ever done in Twine, and they don't really know the tools yet, or their very first, you know, sort of Unity project.
I'm fucking right here. Why are you dragging me like this?
You know, look, I've done those too. I have like five games on my itch.io.
Oh, yeah, I've done those too, Austin. It's okay, Austin. It's okay.
It's all right.
Thank you.
And that's good, and I'm glad it exists, frankly. I'm very glad that it exists. But it can also mean like a really, you know, maybe a small featured, but really, really well done, richly evocative type of game. Mm-hmm. So this is much more of that type. Very, very evocative, very, very fun, very, very cute. It is a short game. It probably took me 45 minutes to get through, but it felt like no 1 second of that 45 minutes was time misspent or time wasted. So you play as a delightful frog detective who gets a call from their boss. I don't know what the
gender
is.
Is this an anthropomorphized frog?
Yes, it's an anthropomorphized. It's all anthropomorphized animals. It actually looks
okay, what's that mean,
little
though? Does that mean like a person with frog ears? Does that mean like a frog is like on the scale?
Yeah.
We've done this before.
Yes.
On the scale from Lion King, where it's just animals what talk, to like anime cat girls, where it's a human who has cat ears,
right,
and somewhere in the middle is like Disney's Robin Hood, where it's like animal people, but they wear clothes and they stand up on two legs. Where does this
middle
fall?
Right in that middle.
Middle, right?
Frog
okay,
detective
wow,
wears
perfect
clothes, but is a frog and where it stands
where's
on
clothes
two legs.
What type of clothes are we talking about here? I got to picture this frog detective
like
in my mind.
Good question. Hey, actually, I've got a GIF up right here. Taking
okay
a look. He
thank
wears
you
khaki pants, or they wear khaki pants and sort
perfect
of like a brown sweater that they call a jumper in the traditional Australian style.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
An Australian.
I believe
Australian
Grace Bruxner
detective
is Australian. So
gotcha.
Yeah. You'll hear
okay
things like
so
jumper
I have it in my head
for sweater. Which is
thank
very
you
nice
for this detail.
Yes.
You may continue now.
Yeah, all right, thank you.
Now that we've established the stakes of this game.
Thank
it's
you.
High stakes. So the frog detective gets a call from their boss who says, "Hey, we got a client, and I decided to call my number one detective, and they weren't available, so you want the job?" And it's like that. It's very cute, very, very, like,
okay,
light Muppet-style kind of humor. Very, very sort of, like, cute and light and sweet. And everything is very funny and very slapstick. And there's a ghost on this island, so you have to go and investigate the ghost on this island. And there are ghost scientists, one of whom is a monkey, one is a lobster, ooh, one is a crocodile. There's all kinds of, like, little animals kind of hanging out. Very simple, sort of low-poly 3D art, but the animation is amazing, actually. Like, really, really nice sort of fluid animation. Everything is done in a very simple style, but very effective, I thought.
It's like flat shading polygons, right?
It's like
flat shaded, but
you know what it reminds me of is something like, it doesn't actually remind me of this because this doesn't do this, but for whatever reason, it's evocative of like Parappa the Rapper to me,
sure,
but actually 3D characters, not 2D cutout characters.
Right, it's just very larger than life cartoonish, but like well done. I know that's mm-hmm feels like a weird distinction, but it doesn't just feel like somebody threw a bunch of slabs of polygons together and just said, that's a frog.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It
like
a
game
animates
Austin
nicely.
Not like a game I would make.
Look, hey,
yeah,
your
no,
first
listen,
game,
it's fine,
not always the biggest success, that's all.
It's not.
It's all right.
It's not. It's fair.
You're learning. I have game design students, you know? It's
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I like this koala that I'm looking at here.
Yeah, there's a good
they
koala.
They all have good clothes. They all have good clothes. So here's the other thing I have to tell you, the truth, is you were like, there's a ghost on the island, and I genuinely gasped. I was like, and I remember the name of this game is The Haunted Island. So I don't know why the fuck that was a surprise.
You know, it was a surprise to Martin, who's the king of the island, who hasn't slept
oh,
in
shit
2 weeks because he's so scared of the ghost.
So are you, is it like an adventure game effectively?
Yes. It's okay. A very sort of light adventure game where you're going around, you're having conversations, and you're sort of getting items from various characters and kind of trading items till you get the, you know, the correct items to move the plot along, basically. It's almost in Donkey Kong Country 3, the bears trading on the islands. A little bit like that. Only this is the whole point of the game. This is all you're doing is kind of walking around, having these conversations, trading items for other items. And it's very, very cute and funny. And it's like light and funny. It's not like, how hilarious. It's just every little bit of dialogue is like dry and very sweet and very, very full of character.
Right.
So it's like a pleasure and a delight to play this game. Nice. It really does feel like a nice little palate cleanser.
Feels like, a lack of cynicism. Like, because like when we talk about like sort of like writing like this, I think like, you know, like Night in the Woods and stuff like that, where like there's like a lot of cynicism and sarcasm in Night in the Woods. I love the writing in that, but it's like a very distinctive style of writing. It sounds like this is a little more like upbeat and fun and lively.
It's a little more Donut County than Night in the Woods.
Gotcha.
Not that Donut County didn't have a little bit of cynicism, but like just kind of the way it's like, oh, we're just all anthropomorphic animals and we're just hanging out and figuring our lives out. Like it's kind of, unironic in a lot of ways, just kind of sweet and funny.
But it's not as like gag driven as Jazz Punk or something. It's not like Rapid Fire. Okay.
I would call it certainly lighter than that.
Grace Bruxner did a game I really liked called Alien Casino. Yes. That's like pay what you want. That is the thing it says it is. It's a casino filled with aliens playing cards and, you know, in hot tubs and stuff.
Love it.
And that is if you enjoy this frog detective game. I keep wanting to say The Great Frog Detective, but that's that's a movie that doesn't exist. It's the sequel to The Great Mouse Detective.
Well, this one might have a sequel too.
I really like the
thing that's cute about this is that it also kind of seems like she wants to make this a series.
Right.
Like, this is like a cute short game, but it does feel like a complete chapter, and it is sort of like, you know, the chapter, the Haunted Island. And it's kind of like the frog detective will continue in, you know, X, Y, and Z
kind of thing, which is very cute.
I would love to see this as like, oh, you know, a new chapter in this comes out every so often as like a really just sweet, nice little game that makes you, I don't know, there are times where I feel like a game like this comes out and it makes you like games again. You know, sometimes it can be very... games can be a lot. And so sometimes it's nice to have something that is like, hey, you know what? Like, a couple of people made this and they clearly put a lot of sort of time and passion and happiness. Mm-hmm. They poured some happiness into this little fruit salad.
Yeah.
That I am now, you know, belaboring the metaphor a little bit, but...
I get you. And that is on itch.io, itch.io, and Steam for like
$4, $5 game.
Nice. Awesome.
Yeah, I will
have to check that out because it seems like it's up my alley. I've been, a thing that happens to me basically every year as we get towards the end of the year discussions and you know, the goaties, and it's like, all right, there's a lot of small stuff from small developers that I can blow through in an hour or two. And one or two of those always takes my breath away. And it's like, wow, that was great. So I'm compiling my list for whatever.
Yeah, you should, because my thing is always just like at the end of the year is like just put out tweets like, yo, what's the small like free like indie game that I have not played that you say someone needs to play? And then make a list of like five of those and then spend an afternoon just like trying to blow through as many of those as possible.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right, let's take a quick break and come back and talk about even more video games. BRB.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.
And we are back. Patrick, you've had this one on your list now for a couple of weeks. I guess maybe not a couple of weeks, maybe just since last week. We've had a couple of busy episodes in a row. We looked up how to pronounce it.
Okay. So we originally were pronouncing it as Deracine or Deracine.
Wrong, but we were wrong.
And then right before we recorded, I said, you know, I bet we could look this up. Try.
Is it De Racine?
Yeah, so I've written this out phonetically in my notebook as De Ra, as in rad. So we can differentiate between Ra and Ra.
Not De Racine, De Racine.
De Racine. De Racine, which is, yeah, this shortish, like a 4-hour, kind of depending on how much time you spend poking around, VR game from Software, specifically, you know, creative led by Hidetaka Miyazaki, the creative lead on Dark Souls, Bloodborne, and the upcoming Sekiro. Which, yo, that game's not that
Ninja
far
Ninja Souls.
Off.
That game is soon. Lots of games are soon.
Lots of Anthem is soon.
Oh, boy.
There's going to be a beta for Anthem soon, I bet. And, yeah, and so I've been... As someone that has been like a big VR advocate in the past, but that kind of got away with it, or away from it for about, I don't know, a year or so. Like, I played RE7, and I, you know, will argue to this day that RE7 is transcendently different in VR. It is a far more intense, scary experience, one that is probably too much for a lot of people, arguably. But that it's not just that you can look around. I think it fundamentally changes the immersion of the experience in sort of the horror in a way that. It remains sort of like a tentpole reason. Like, I would have paid, and I did pay lots of money for VR devices in which, like, that was worth it alone, even if I never had another experience in VR. Especially given that I, you know, have sort of such an interest in horror and stuff like that. Like, that game was, like, made for me, and it was beautiful and horrifying in VR. I kind of got away from it because just the cables, honestly, it's just, like, it was just too much effort, like... Had my kid, and it's just like, when I want to sit down, I got 45 minutes, and it's like, where did I... Oh, I borrowed that USB cable to charge that other thing. Okay, now I got to find another one. Where does that go on the PS4? Like, where did the headset... It was just... I just got away from it. And at E3 last year, I played a game called Moss, and it was so charming and, like, really took my breath away. And then that game came out earlier this year. It was on PSVR, and then it was on a bunch of other... It's on everything else now. It's a delightful little adventure game, light sort of puzzle elements. And there was Astrobot, which is, like, another game that is, like, creeping around in my head as, like, I could easily make that my favorite game of the year. I think it is, like, that good.
That good.
And also, it's I want to, like, punch it up in a way that I want, like, hey... If I said it's that good, then, like, so many people are going to miss out on a game that I think they would fall in love with that it breaks my heart. And so I've been trying to, like, just, I've actually finally, so what I did was I moved my VR setup from, so I have a projector in my main room, and projectors just make all sorts of electronics really complicated because things have to be on opposite sides of the room. I'm currently in the process of, like, swapping out this old stereo system with, like, 5 speakers that has wires everywhere. For, like, a soundbar thing I bought from Black Friday, but I need, like, 50-foot optical cables.
Right.
It's a whole thing. So the VR stuff is even worse because you have this camera that I had to position in weird spots. And I finally just realized part of the reason I wasn't playing more of these games was the pure setup process. And so what I need to do is just spend an hour and figure out a better setup for this. So I moved it into my actual office. Like, I lined up all the cables really nicely and, like, taped them down and, like, positioned them in a way that it was, like, very easy to move the PS4 from my projector back into my office. And I have a TV in my office. It's not very good, but you need a TV in order for the VR stuff to work. It has to output to HDMI something other than just the headset. So it's mostly just there for me to turn on and ignore. But it now means that I can just sort of sit down, slot the PS4 in, turn on the button, and, like, everything is ready to go. I'm trying to, like, spend more time with these games because I know I often find stuff that I like a lot. And it's so that the setup is you are in sort of like a boarding school or like some sort of like school environment with a bunch of kids, and they summon a fairy, and you play this fairy who has the ability to both jump through different time periods, and also you have the ability to, like, take and give life. So, like, you can, like,
that's a big ability to have.
It is. It's a big responsibility. Where, like, you can, like, one of the early things is, like, you touch a flower, and then that, like, charges up this life ring, which then you can use to like transfer that energy to another flower or something like that. Now, this is not something you
have. Are you killing the flower? Are you taking the life from the flower? Mm-hmm. Or are you, okay.
Well, so the way it works, the way the, without getting into too much of the story stuff, like the way the, mechanically, the underlying magic of the fairy is that it is taking your time. And so, like, the time that is left for any sort of living object is something that can be siphoned away and also given.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so the nature of the fairies, they're often seen as sort of like magical trickster creatures in this world. They are often or mostly evil. And in this case, you are playing a good fairy that is like kind of playing tricks on the kids, like you're going around and like taking keys out of their back pockets and using that to like advance the story. The setup for the game, okay, I just spent all this time saying like, oh, I'm gonna find an easier VR setup. So this fucking game uses, not only does it require that you have the VR headset, which is its own sort of setup nightmare, but then you also need two PlayStation Move controllers. Because it wants you to, you know, each hand is one of the Move controllers. And there are games that justify the use of, like, having your hands as, like, separate interactable objects in an environment. This game does not. Like, literally all you're doing is, like, one hand picks something up and then, like, some you can come over and, like, take something out of it. Like, there would have been a way for them to accomplish the interactions that they're going for, and then also made this game much more widely accessible. Because I think there are lots of people that probably own a PSVR headset and just use a DualShock, because 99% of VR games just use a DualShock just fine.
Especially on PSVR.
Especially on PSVR.
They're better for it, honestly.
Yes. But this game does not have any just DualShock use. You have to have both these Move controllers. I fortunately had some laying around from, like, a long time ago when I was like hoarding them to play Johann Sebastian Joust with friends. So I have like just four of them that
truly
I like bought.
A different time.
There was a time when Sony gave up on the Move controller prior to the VR headset, like they just went on sale at like Amazon and GameStop and you could buy them for like $15.
Right.
I just like hoarded them 1 year. And so it's frustrating because it doesn't really take advantage of this technology that it's requiring you to do. And also, I had just even the hardest time getting it to stay in the camera to the point where it never became quite clear, like, is my setup incorrect or am I interacting with the game wrong? Like, I was getting torn out of the experience because I couldn't tell, like, where my setup problems began or my interactive, like, or I was just using the tools in front of me improperly. The way I would say it's interesting is purely to see like a more traditional narrative from software. Like so much of the storytelling in the Souls games is not necessarily abstract. Like there are like A plot lines and B plot lines and C plot lines, but it requires so much work on the part of the player. It's not presented in a traditional, like, here's the story being told in front of you where you're going to follow a through line from A to Z. And well, certainly there are things you can piece together that's happening in this game. It is much more a traditional narrative where you are interacting with characters who like move with like real animations and like their facial it's just a lot more traditional.
No one just like leans against a pillar and does a creepy laugh after saying something.
There is a creepy laugh in this game though.
Hell
yeah.
It
feels absolutely like they are just playing into the meme. Like it does that. Like it feels like they realize the creepy laugh is just a part of their games and there has to be a creepy laugh in every game. And there's
at least one creepy laugh.
There are plenty of laughs. Like the children laugh normally. Like they don't like laugh in a very odd way, but there is a character in a moment where like it happens and you're just like, okay, from like, you know, like someone showed you a video compilation and you're like, oh right, we need to get one of those in there.
Perfect.
It's hard for me to say if it's like good or it's interesting. I don't know that I'd like go as far as to say like I had a great time with it, but I found it like, if you are a fan of From Software's products, like the stuff that they make, like, and you have the means to play this, like, I don't know if I'd go out of my way, like, I wouldn't buy a PSVR for this, I wouldn't buy Move controllers for this, but, like, if you have the means to play it, you have stuff you can borrow from folks, like, and you love Miyazaki and you like want to see him try a different type of storytelling, like, this is, it's interesting. There are like worse ways to spend a couple of hours, but there were also better ways to spend a couple of hours. And I mostly started justifying my time with it because I've now become convinced that it's a Bloodborne prequel. like, reasons that I don't want to get into because I don't want to spoil it. There are very obvious Easter eggs in a way that that I still may write a story about this. Because From Software has a history, if you play their games, of putting in slight nods to their other games, specifically in the Souls line, where like Demon Souls and Dark Souls feel like Dark Souls is a sequel to Demon Souls, and it mm-hmm. is mechanically, but it is not in terms of like the world and narrative. Like those are separate universes, but there are nods in Dark Souls that like give you a way of saying like, well, you can see how you could like. In a Zelda-ish timeline fashion.
Yes. It's as if you're building a puzzle and you're missing 12 pieces that it's like you have two puzzle boxes and it's as if they make one big mural and you could connect them if only you had the extra 30 pieces you need. But also you have an extra 15 pieces on each puzzle that do not connect in any way that prevent you from doing it. So not only are you missing pieces, there are also blockers that make you go like, no, it couldn't be that.
And yet, like, the series has time travel. And, like, look, anything could be canon if you want to retcon it. And so, like, so part of the fun is, like, if you want to go dig in, like, I'm sure there are long YouTube videos and Wikipedia pages that, like, explain, like, what would be connections between Demons, Dark, and Bloodborne. Mm-hmm. But those are all, like, pretty, you have to do some work to see, like, where the connections are. Whereas, like, these, like, the Easter eggs in here are, like, super explicit, like, you're picking up, like, a doll that looks like a doll from Bloodborne. Like, there are, and there are, references to a tale that is not yet, like, fully told and stuff like that, which, like, I'm taking to interpret so I can be disappointed that it's a Bloodborne 2 reference.
But you don't be disappointed. One, we're going to get Bloodborne 2 at some point. Probably. It's going to happen.
That game is probably a PS5, like, launch.
Launch PS5 game. Yeah, it's a 2020. We'll get that in 2020. Yeah. Put fucking money on it. Here we go.
If I can gamble, prediction.
$20 on it.
I started gambling in sports. Yeah. Can I start gambling? Bovada, like, let me gamble on, like, video game release timeframes.
I think we're not allowed to do that. I think that's what got Pete Rose in trouble. I think we're not. We can't do it, Patrick. We're not allowed.
That's a no.
It's not insider trading, but it's something. But yeah, like, I, the thing for me is, like, I think I've said this before, but I've spent a lot of time in my life rolling my eyes when people, like, are desperate for two things that are not connected to become connected, where it's like, just let them live on their own. It's okay. Like, you don't have to solve for X when it comes to media you love.
Right.
Like, it sometimes a cameo is a cameo or an Easter egg is an Easter egg.
Yeah.
And sometimes there are connections. There is joy in letting those, you know, flourish and build and et cetera. But as someone who tells stories on the internet often, it can be frustrating to be like, oh, I see how these two things are connected exactly right. Where it's like, oh no, I'm not really like, yes, there is. As a creator, I have certain ideas in my head
There's thematic overlap, right?
Because I'm the same person who's writing these stories or whatever. But they're not actually. You're not going to find causality or causal links. But with Bloodborne and Demon Souls and Dark Souls, I completely fall into the trap of not wanting the connection, but enjoying the play, the sort of like narrative play in my own head of seeing how those things reoccur, seeing how weapons like the Moonlight Butterfly like recur through everything from Demon Souls through Armored Core into Bloodborne, like that game. And it's clearly just like an insider nod, right? But like something like the Storm King, whatever the Storm King blade is that you use on that one great boss fight in
Dark Souls 3, right?
But at first it shows up in Demon Souls.
Oh, right, because you explicitly use it in Demon
Souls. You need
it
to fight the Storm King. The Storm Ruler is the name of the sword that, like,
that's one of the coolest fucking fights in that game.
That whole fight. Demon Souls, Sony, I'm begging you.
Do the remake.
I'm not this person. You know I'm not this person. I'm begging you. Please do the remake.
That game would, more than anything in their catalog, would so benefit Plus, that game is just so interesting in other ways. Like,
it's so fucking weird. And I know it's a lot of work because it was a PS3 game. I get it. We consider it. So I'll say right now, briefly, really quick, our next Waypoint 101 for the end of the year is Mark of the Ninja. We announced it with a post on the site. We didn't talk about it on a podcast. So Mark of the Ninja, it's available everywhere. It's available on the Switch. It's available on PS4 and Xbox One. It's available on PC. It's available on Xbox 360 and PS3. It's one of the reasons we chose it, like, on top of other things around, like, we wanted to get away from first-person shooters or third-person. Mm-hmm. Like, a whole bunch of reasons went into it. You can read the post on the site for kind of what my thinking was behind it, what our thinking was behind it. But I will say that Demon's Souls was one of the other things in contention for Waypoint 101. And it's like, well, like, I don't even know if I have a working PS3 anymore.
Right.
I'm not looking to set one up in my room.
You don't want to go buy a 60 gig PS3 backwards compatible.
PS4 with a backwards compatibility. No, I don't want to do that. Like, there's a lot of hurdles to go back and play that game. On top of the servers not being online or whatever, but like, what I know I would end up doing is just watching someone else play through that game, watching a video of it. And that's not what I want to do with Waypoint 101. I'd like to be able to actually play through it. But man, I want to play through the Demon's Souls one more time in my life. That's all. Just one more time.
Just one more soul.
Just one more soul. I love those little non connections. Those little
they do it the right way, where it's like they're clearly aware of what. That fans have fun with that stuff, but they seem too precious about it. And also, it doesn't seem like the fans get too precious about it either.
No,
it
is exactly.
The community itself is enjoying, in the same way that the games and the systems and how they work are a puzzle box. Like, it's fun to just imagine, like, in this, like, there are so many layers to the Souls games embedded in everything about them that is not a far-fetched to imagine. Well, if we put in the work, if we put in the effort, if we found this one item, then we could find all those missing puzzle pieces. And because thematically and sort of like both in like theme of story and mechanics and world, like it leads to a community that can have fun with trying to make those leaps of logic and those leaps of and those connections in a way that's
and I think
fun.
It makes sense. It makes sense that like in so many of their games, and they come at this in different angles. They come at this in Dark Souls with history, they come at this in Demon Soul or in a Bloodborne with religion. So many times they are talking about who controls historical narratives. They're talking about the ways in which memory are faulty, the ways in which cultural memory is faulty, and ways in which important stories are elided out of the telling of the way the past went. You know, Dark Souls 3 ends up literally taking you back in time to various things that have happened to see what happened there. And then, like, you also get the perspective of the various schools on as to what happened there. Or, you know, Bloodborne obviously is literally you excavating the history of this terrible city, going deeper and deeper and deeper until you hit something like truth that is overwhelming and impossible to comprehend. And so, like, yeah, I love the idea that, like, it's part of the reason why I like playing around in that space is because it doesn't like I feel like I'm solving a puzzle box so much as I'm configuring the puzzle box in different shapes and being like, that's an interesting shape for it to take. But what if it was this instead? Right. What if, you know, and that's shout outs to From Software. I'm super excited for Sekiro next couple months.
Okay, how's that going to connect?
We'll see. It might.
And
and
part of the reason that makes this so fun is because of the corporate roadblocks that like prevent actual explicit connections, right? So it's
right.
Like,
yeah. Right.
Like Sony right. owns Demon and Bloodborne.
Yes.
From owns Dark Souls in Japan, but Namco owns it in like
Do they own it here or do they just publish it here?
I don't remember how that breaks down. But either way, it's like it's not Sony, right? And so and now I don't know how the IP ownership works with this new one, but it's published by either way, like the worlds are separated not only in terms of like timeline right. and place, but also in terms of corporate like
corporate
bullshit.
Interests. Yeah.
That you know, if anything, you know, Occam's Razor is the reason for lack of a connection more to do with that than anything else, possibly.
Maybe, probably.
But it's fun either way, and so and I guess just to put a fine point at like the about the Bloodborne 2 thing. I don't want a Bloodborne 3. I just feel like there was so much setup in that game that they could do.
Patrick,
more
you
with.
Said you want a Bloodborne 3.
No, I don't.
Just now.
I don't.
Oh, you don't want a Bloodborne 3.
I think Dark Souls 3 was too far. Like, I mean, Dark Souls 3 was fine. I just feel like for gotcha. What they had set up for like the combat. And maybe I ended up feeling like Sekiro is like Bloodborne
sure.
2 in a lot of ways. But I also just loved that world and the creature design that I just would love to see.
A little bit more.
A little bit more of that. So, gotcha. Check that out if you're... You got to be a diehard fan. Everyone else, I would say, you know, maybe take a pass.
Yeah. We still have a bunch of other stuff to get to. Really quickly, I just want to hit that I returned to Battletech. I didn't get to play a lot of stuff over the weekend.
Is the expansion out?
So the expansion comes out tomorrow. I can't talk about the expansion yet. And also, I can't talk about the expansion yet because it's like a post-game expansion. So it ships with two things. It ships with a career mode where instead of doing the story stuff, you just run a mercenary company and like play the politics game, sort of. You kind of like decide which factions to side with, and you're just dealing with... It's almost like a franchise mode in a Madden.
Oh, so
there's,
you're not
right?
doing any of the battles.
That's cool.
You're doing the battles. Sorry, you are doing the battles, but you're not doing the story battles.
Gotcha,
you're just doing the kind of like proc gen battles, right? And then just balancing the books and keeping your mercenaries happy and upgrading your ship. And you do all that stuff in the main story game anyway, but it's like if you just want to jump in with a new game and don't want to do any of the story missions and don't want... And also, it's almost like a post-game save, but from the beginning. Instead of like starting you... So I beat the game. So here's what I'll say. I beat Battletech last night. I really enjoyed it. And now I'm in a post-game, and there's stuff that's from the new expansion I can't talk about yet. But in general, it's like, okay, I'm in the post-game. I can keep doing missions. I can keep doing whatever. But I have all of these super strong mechs. Like, I'm just in God. I'm like God tier at this point. And, you know, the game levels up with you sort of. Like, there's enough places I could go to do challenging missions still. It's not over by
any
means.
But you've mostly got, like, ahead of the power curve.
I'm like, yeah, what I will say is the middle of that game for me was the best part where I'm like really taking damage in battles and like going back to my mech bay and being like, well, fuck, what the hell do I, that arm is gone. I can afford to get the arm back, but not put any weapons on it. And then needing to decide like, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring back that arm and I'm just going to dump a ton of armor points onto it. So it's almost like a shield for me. I'm just always going to position this unit such that that arm is just in the way of any incoming missiles or whatever. And by the end of the game, it's like, I have all these super powerful assault class mechs that are just able to tear through shit. I was just really able to do just the storyline missions at the end and just like power through them, which were fun. I liked it. I think it ended really well. But one of the nice things about, or one of the things I'm excited about with the career mode, I actually have not dug into the career mode yet, is just like going back through that power curve from the jump. And then the other stuff I haven't gotten to yet, but is there, and I'm excited to start trying it out, is they added more story content into what the post-game is, basically. Or both in the career mode and in the main story mode, there are these things called Flashpoints. The name of the expansion is Battletech Flashpoint, which it's like linked missions that are progressively harder, basically. It's like when you... In the main game, it happens a couple of times, but basically, normally, you play through a mission, and then you get some downtime to repair. But the flashpoints, the pitch on them is like, no, you have to do this, and then there's a follow-up mission, and there's a follow-up mission. And so your stuff is just getting hammered on across this longer campaign of like three or four direct interlocked missions. And so I'm curious to check that stuff out. But basically, it was just nice to go back to that game. It was one of those things where I was like, I have like five more story missions left. That shouldn't take me that long. And then I watched as my hour count in that game jumped from like, you know, 64 hours to 80 hours. Because actually that five missions took a lot of time. So that is the thing that I played over the break, basically. That and some more, and some Mark of the Ninja, because we're doing the 101. Yeah. Anything else? Patrick, you were driving a lot. Did you play any, or not driving a lot, but you were traveling a lot. Did you do any like mobile gaming over the weekend? Patrick, we cannot hear you at all.
Sorry,
I
had muted. No worries. I did do a lot of driving, but when I was not driving, my daughter, whenever she sees the Switch, she wants to steal it out of my hands, and I was in the back seat when I was not driving. So I did have one night when we were at Thanksgiving where someone had to stay home while everyone else went out to go have fun, and I had to be a parent. And so I stayed home, which is fine. I was actually tired. I pretended I was disappointed that I couldn't go.
I love it when that lines up, when you're just
and
like,
and then I was
I
just so tired. Like, I would try to like drink some, like when I'm really tired, where coffee's just not doing anymore. That's when I'll have like a small Coke or something like that. I just need something with like way more caffeine. Mm-hmm. And that just didn't do anything. And I was like, I can't do it. I don't want to go bowling. I love bowling. I would find a way to find the energy. But what if I didn't find a way to find the energy? Yeah. I could just stay home. And so I pretended I was like super bummed that I couldn't go. I was like, you know what? Gotta be the debt. You know what? Everyone, go have fun. I'm going to take
go
the hit
fun.
Tonight.
Without
I'll,
me.
I'll stay.
Take one for the team.
You know, you got a couple of half-hearteds like, are you sure? Like, do you, we could, I was like, I got it. Like, give me some sympathy. And secretly, I'm like, all right, pour one last drink, sit on the couch, try and keep my eyes open for 45 minutes and play this game. And then I'm going to go to sleep at a reasonable time. So I did play about 2 hours of the new
awesome.
Sweary game, sort of a platformer puzzle game in which a lot, mechanically speaking, the main thing that you're doing is dismembering your body on purpose in order to solve various puzzles. I will say 2 hours in, so this game was sort of not on my radar at all. Like, I saw some of the trailers and was just like, it's nothing in the trailers did anything for me. And it was one of those games like, well, we'll see what the word of mouth is like, and then I'll reevaluate. Just in a sea of, you know, so many games, like, as much as I like sweary stuff, I was just like, I just don't know if I'll have time for that. And then there were just a slew of, like, critics that I really respect that said this game was not only interesting, but, like, really powerful and had, like, really important and provocative messages about, like, just like who you are and like, you know, and sort of identity. And like from a lot of like trans critics that were saying like, hey, like this game fucking, you know, not perfect, but like is really powerful and interesting. I was like, okay, all right. Like that's a lot. And like the word,
this game about dismembering yourself to move forward is okay. It doesn't.
Do you tell me those pieces? And it's like that. I was like, that's. Do you know? Like, sorry. Like that doesn't seem like a thing that is gonna work. And it came from And yet it was like, and it wasn't just like sort of, you know, it was specifically seeing it from like trans critics that were saying like speaking to these issues. They're like, actually, like, you should be paying
attention.
Yeah, there
was a piece by Heather Alexander over at Kotaku, which was the first one that really drew my attention to it also. Or, like, again, I'd had attention on it because it was sweary, but it was not at the top of the list in a very busy fall.
It was like a game I was going to play in the, like, Christmas afterward, you know, in the holiday break and be like, yo, maybe if this is great, it should have been on my list, but I just didn't find the time for it. And so I will say in the first 2 hours, I have not found what people are speaking to yet. I think I'm very early in the story. It's yet to sort of, like, have a turn. In fact, it doesn't really have a story yet. All I'm really doing right now is just dismembering myself and solving some puzzles, and that stuff is okay.
Are you paying attention to the phone stuff?
The phone stuff is good. I will say, like, the writing is really well done in the cell phone. Like, there's some really... 2018 actually has some really strong cell phone writing. The first episode of Life is Strange's new season had really, really, really strong cell phone text writing. I would not say this is as good as that, but it is also well done. I guess I will just say, like, the mechanical stuff is just, like, so rough that it's fine, but it's not. I don't know if I'd go as far as say it's like good, and so I'm just kind of waiting for the story to pick up. I don't know if you got any further than me. Also, so I got as far I'm as like, yeah, a, as yeah, a puzzle. I'll say just so you have a sort of like a gauge of where I'm at. Where you there's like a body, there's like this big creature like on a wall that is like spouting nonsense, and then you have to put like an arm and two legs in a certain order.
So I'm past you by like 40 minutes, okay. I'd say, something like that. Or have you started doing the light and darkness stuff, basically?
No, I basically solved that puzzle with the wheel, so I think you haven't done anything.
I think I'm
a
full section past you, and that next section took me a little while. I will say that you definitely start to get more of the questions about identity and sexuality and identity and, like, feelings of the world wanting this character to be something that she's interested in being other things, and that is not just about her queerness, not just about her gender identity. It is also just about like who she is as a person and all of the ways in which the world is pushing down on her and saying no, like fit into these molds. And I think that there is, again, it's like one of those things that's like it feels so stressful to say the words, this is a game about solving problems via self-harm, via very campy, video game campy, which does not mean like, it can be, it's gory. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, you like throw yourself.
I want to talk through this, and I do want to say like, this whole section should probably have a content warning, which we'll add after the fact, but like, specifically a content warning for the next little bit, because I'm going to talk about how the puzzles are solved, because it is not enough to just say you hurt yourself to solve puzzles. Like, what you're doing is, again, content warning for the next like 5 minutes or whatever we talk about this, is things like I'll throw myself into saw blades to cut my leg off so that I'm crawling on the ground so that I can crawl under a pit, or so I have a leg to throw onto a switch to hold the switch down, or to knock something off of a ledge. It's this like very,
or down to your head, so you can cut yourself down to where your head is bouncing around. And specifically, often if you want to get the like donut collectibles, which then seem to unlock some extra conversations, which is like a good carrot for wanting to do that stuff. That usually
which speaks to the quality of those conversations, because otherwise you wouldn't care.
No, but yeah, you have a little head bouncing around, and it's like very comic and like goofy. Which again, like at the point where I'm in, I'm like still struggling to figure out, because the story has been so light and hasn't really like gone in too many directions yet. It feels. The way people talked about this game certainly feels at odd with like the aesthetic that I have I've experienced, you know, 90 minutes in.
Yeah. So I'm just on the edge. I'm just on the edge of seeing that stuff. And I've had to sidebar it to talk about other more recent games, because that's what our job is. And that can be very frustrating sometimes. So yeah, so I'm going to hopefully finish. That's on my list of things to finish this week if I can get to it. Because I talked to somebody else who'd beaten it recently, and they're like, "Oh, you're like very close to like the big turn, kind of the big final stuff." So
it's only like four or 5 hours long game. So like I'm gonna give it its time. Like I'm, you know,
and I just going back to it, like I think there was something very powerful in the notion of like there's a way to do a game in which puzzle solving through self harm is the most like shock driven edgy like just kind of shitty and it's an attempted play at just to get
a very clumsy metaphor for what you're trying to get
at the best. And here there are moments when it feels clumsy, and there are lots of moments where it feels like it's touching some tender spots, and I mean tender in like the open wound sense, in the like my skin hurts sense. But it feels a little bit more informed and critical in the idea. There's so much about it. So I was thinking, so Rami Ismail had a tweet this past weekend about something entirely different. What is Rami's Twitter? What is Rami's?
The underscore Rami.
THA_Rami. Talking about Pokemon and talking about like, do you think that, you know, what would it be like to grow up on Pokemon Island, on Kanto Island or whatever, where you're like running around as a kid and like, what's happening with all the other kids? Why is it that the nurses do this? And like, very much like poking fun at, in good humor, the kind of ridiculous absurdity of a world in which the world of Pokemon happens. Like, no, that world doesn't make any sense. It's completely ridiculous. And that, plus some comments from some other people, got me thinking about games as poetics. We often think about games in this very representational sense of like, a game happens, things that happen on the screen happen in the game. Like, that is the true thing that happened in the fiction of the world. Right. So you look at something like Life is Strange, and like, it's not a story with no contradictions or with no inconsistencies, but like the events that happen on the screen are the events that happen in the story. But sometimes in a game, there is abstraction happening and there is a sort of poetics happening in which there are symbols at work, and those symbols often play through gameplay, right? Those range from something like The Missing, in which self-harm and the feeling of needing to break yourself up into little pieces, the feeling of needing to like walk through obstacles that hurt you is the only way to get forward and to become your true self and etc., to, you know, XCOM, a game in which you're supposedly fighting this war against aliens, but at most you're ever fielding six people. Like, that's not how wars are fought. Wars aren't fought between six people and 20 aliens. They're fought between 6,000 people and 8,000 aliens or whatever it is. But in the realm of games, there's a layer of abstraction there, partially because you want to tell a slightly different type of story. You want to tell a story about six soldiers, you know, or a Fire Emblem is another great one, right? Fire Emblem's narratives are all about world-ending huge battles, or these leaders are supposedly leading in thousands of troops, but really it's just like it's two people who are dating, right? And so it's like, okay, partly they want to tell a story about people who are dating, they want to tell like anime love story stuff, but partly it is also this feeling of how can you communicate something in this poetic symbolic sense with the rhythm of gameplay, or with the what type of images can be called to mind, you know, because you could do the thing that war games do, for instance, where you have a unit on a map that literally represents 1,000, you know, 1,000 tanks are in this battalion. That's too many tanks. Battalions don't have that many tanks. Rob's going to kill me for saying 1,000 tanks in a battalion. Rob, don't listen to this.
He just threw the podcast across the table.
But you know what I mean? Like, oh, this unit stands for 1,000 troops. Or you can do the XCOM thing of this single soldier has a name and you're just pretending that it's six people versus the world. And I think the missing is one of those things that really forces you to remember that that is the way that games work, that they work in that range of representational states, because the most powerful version of this story is the one in which you are, for me, the moments that have worked the most are the parts where I'm, like, just suffering through it. Where I'm just like, this fucking sucks. I don't want to walk into a saw blade again. I don't want to do it. And the thing that ends up communicating is something that is not... The thing that sucks about it is not, I don't want to walk into a saw blade again. It's, I can't believe the only way I can make forward progress in this game is through hurting myself. The only way that I can, like, get to whatever the ending of this is through this constant state of trial and error and breaking myself into little pieces. And I know that in the poem of this game, the thing that is happening, or sorry, in the narrative of this game, this is not about one person walking into 32 different saw blades and being crushed by 72 different crushing things. Even if, you know, in the think about what the movie version of this game would be, the anime version of this, there would not be this many saw blades. There would be an episode about a saw blade 100%. but in the game, you have to do that thing. And part of that is just getting that effect, because if you just did it once, it would not stick with you in that same way.
Well, does the fact that it's slapstick help or hurt that? Does that kind of, like, complicate this? Does it complicate that sort of poetic aspect?
I don't think it's... I think there are parts that feel... There are parts that feel campy. I think, like, it's not slapstick. It's not played for laughs. I don't think it's ever played for laughs. I think that there are some awkward chuckles. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, because if the alternative is, if you're choosing this particular way of expressing it thematically through the gameplay, if you were to adopt a more serious tone, I don't... Like, could you... That would be too much.
I couldn't get through it.
So, like, if they're choosing this is their way of expressing the themes sort of mechanically, if it was to be like, it sounded every time that you were doing this, that it felt like, sounded like real bodily harm.
Tomb Raider deaths.
Yes.
The Tomb Raider, if it was doing that, yes. I couldn't get through stuff. This game. Yeah. Yeah, the torture porn stuff. Like, I would not be able to get through this
and
game.
And so I think they, you know, it seems maybe chose wisely to like find some middle where it's like you're just turning the dial a couple of nods so like that you're it's not overwhelming where like it stings right like it's like it, you get like what it's going for but it's not overpowering in a sense where it feels masochistic in a way that yeah like torture porn is probably the appropriate comparison there. It doesn't because they could have done a version like that, but then especially the way that the themes this game is playing with, it sounds like that would have been to do that for 4 hours. Could you do that?
So one, I wouldn't want to see it. And two, to the degree that this is a game about, like, from the jump, this is clearly a game about a queer relationship. It is two women out camping and, like, clearly in love with each other, and they get separated from each other. And you're playing the one who's, like, chasing the one who kind of goes missing, the missing. And there is, one, I think that there is room in the world for marginalized creators to make art that, one, is not for me. So if a marginalized creator was like, no, I want to make the game in which this character is tearing themselves apart in Tomb Raider-style detail, fucking more power to you if you want to do that. Like, go for it. I might not be able to get through it. And there certainly have been works of art in the history of the world made by both marginalized and non-marginalized creators who deal with things that aren't for me, and I just am okay with that. Two, I think there's a separate question there, though, which is this coming from who does that benefit, right? So, like, if an independent creator was like, as a trans person, I think this is a really powerful, metaphor for change and for transformation and for the pressures of the outside world and for blah, 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 blah. And so I want to do this in this hyper-realistic sense. Rad. Big corporation, not that I don't even know who published this game, but
Arc,
you know,
System
games sure. Arc System work being like, we're going to publish a game in which we depict the mutilation of queer bodies over and over again in a highly realistic way. There I kind of have to draw a line in terms of like it being a thing that I'm chill with, because then it's literally about the profit motive and it stops just being about the creation of an art form. This, I think, smartly says it can't... One, it's just not going for that type of realism to begin with. But two, I think that it avoids that reaction from me. And it avoids the sort of, like, appropriation of queer pain because it is, it feels authentic to the experience of queer pain, but also because it doesn't fetishize the pain in a way that's like interested in depicting it in unique and different ways over and over and over again. It doesn't become rote at any point. Like every time I go into a new level, I'm like, oh boy, what the fuck is this going to do? But it never, it is neither, it's not like an old adventure game where I'm curious to see the deaths. And it's not, and it's also not like the Tomb Raider reboot where each death is this like particularly devised, like you said, torture.
And there's not like achievements tied to like throw yourself into the meat grinder 500 times and see how the arms come out.
I don't think so. Yeah, I hope not. I actually don't know if that's true. I hope.
Well, I guess Switch doesn't have achievements, so I'm playing it on Switch, so I'm not getting exactly. Okay, hold on. I'm gonna look up the missing achievements theme.
And I want to be clear. I think that the conversation I was having, the divide I was making before between independent art and corporate art and all that stuff is very blurry. I don't think that there's like an easy, like, well, if this game was made by 12 people, that's one too many persons, so they're not allowed to do blank. Like, I think it's super blurry. I think that whatever the line between kind of personal art and kind of public and privatized art. Is there's a weird space there, especially as independent artists gain recognition and are able to do you know, other stuff. I think it's also especially the case given Swery has had missteps in this space before. I like a lot of what Deadly Premonition does, but there's a character who is just the worst, who's like the end of the Thomas character, the reveal of the Thomas character in the kind of final act falls into all of the worst tropes around you know, pathologizing queer bodies and making transness into villainy. It's the worst.
Yeah.
Do you see any bad achievements here?
There are only two, but everything seems plot related. So I think whatever it is related to something you're doing with your body in the plot. I wish I had the line in front of me, but the game starts with like a very right, like it starts with a line that's like everyone should be believed for who they. I'm butchering what it is.
Yeah, I'll read it. It's this game was made with the belief that nobody is wrong for being what they are.
Okay.
Which I think it sort of sets a certain tone, sets a certain intention. Well, has anyone interviewed Swery about this game? Because like I would be,
I don't know,
super curious to know. I have to see more of it before, like, I guess, you know, see where I fall on it, but. Just very risky narrative choice because there's it sounds like it's largely stuck the landing, but it's not had you got 90% of it and messed up the last 10%, like you don't get credit.
Right.
Yeah.
I've just checked this long play and I am in fact just under 2 hours away from the end. So I'm going to try to push through this week. I have 2 hours. I can find 2 hours. I can do it.
So. I'm very curious. Certainly, whenever gallows humor is kind of used in games, it tends to be all the way camp, or it tends to be all the way in orbit, that kind of thing, which has its uses. I mean, just briefly, like, most of the people in my life that have seen the worst things and have the worst feelings in general use a lot of gallows humor. It is sort of something that is a defense mechanism and a coping mechanism. So I'm always curious to see how it's treated in any game, any movie, any sort of piece. So
definitely, yeah. So Danielle, I would love to hear your take on this stuff 100%. So hopefully, this is one of those ones that's like, do we try to all make time for it so we can talk about it towards the end of the year? Because 4.5 hours or so is not that long in the scope of a year filled with 70-hour fucking games.
Yeah, for sure.
You know? Yeah, it might be. I mean, I think you and I will probably at least get to the end. And Danielle, I think you definitely should. Yeah. You know, we'll. Check.
I'm also just curious about, for both of you, like, I'm coming this as a game, as a person who isn't a big platformer fan, yeah, so I'm curious, so it's weird for me, because I'm like,
it's clumsy as fuck, like, it's not fun to control, I know the Japanese games swap A and B, but, like, this game, like, I am constantly forgetting how the basic controls work. I'm jumping when I mean to crawl, I'm crawling when I mean to jump, I'm accidentally, it's just, yeah, no, it's clumsy in all the ways that Swery games mechanically have often been clumsy, but, and the puzzles are, like, just good enough that they're not, like, overly irritating when they don't make, like, I don't know, it's fine, like, but that's always been Swery's thing, right? It's, like, you're not there for the mechanics. Yeah. It often, you, it's better when the mechanics are serving the thematics, even if they're not necessarily like quote unquote fun in the traditional sense. And this game seems to be riding that fine line enough. And also it's the notion that what sold me on it was 4 hours. Like I was not going to play 12 hours. Like once I played an hour, I was like, oh Jesus. Like, I don't know if I can play a game this rough for 12 hours, but four hours, like I can do. So
you get through it. You get through it.
So yeah, we'll have to loop back around.
Yeah. Speaking of violence and mutilation and everything else, Danielle, you've been playing more of Hitman 2.
Yes, I have. This is actually my first experience hands-on with Hitman.
Oh,
I,
awesome.
Like you, in 2016, watched a ton of Hitman, mm-hmm. the 2016 game, but didn't really play it. I have a copy that's like sitting there, and I'm frustrated that it's just sitting there, I know. But I finally got my hands on this one, and I am really, really enjoying it. Obviously, I actually had a lot of problems with the first mission. I died a lot in the first mission.
The New Zealand beach mission?
Beach, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Just for whatever reason, I'm doing fine now. I did the sort of training mission.
Shook it off, yeah, okay.
Yeah. But it's just, I guess it was it has to do with, okay, so I love Dishonored 2, mm-hmm. love Death of the Outsider, of course. But it always felt like those games gave you a lot of leeway once things go wrong, and they always go wrong. And so, you know. Even though I play high, you know, those games I play high level of being seen, but not killing people.
Low death.
Yes,
right.
Exactly. That's kind of how I do.
Yeah.
Right?
Low chaos, but high broken stealth.
They see
stuff.
Me, but I put them to sleep, and then I put them in the recovery position because I'm a very polite EMT, and I want them to all be okay. Yeah, I put them in.
But Hitman 2 doesn't have like a sleep dart gun.
Right.
That like when things go bad in Hitman, things go bad.
They go bad. Yeah.
Or I guess there's a sleep dart gun, except what it is a can of spaghetti. Like
spaghetti. Yeah. There's like a couple things you can throw that won't kill them. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, most things that you can throw aren't death instruments. They're just like things you find, right?
Exactly. So I'm still playing like that for sure. Okay. Once I got off the beach, there's a lot of other ways of kind of recovering a little bit, I guess, once you screw up. Which is
the skies changes and distractions and stuff.
You can blend in a little bit better, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, totally.
So I'm having a lot of fun with it. Although I am, of course, because I'm weird, every time I'm like, okay, would this actually kill you in real life? And how would I fix that? Like as an EMT. So I'm like watching this and playing it, and I'm just like, I wonder how much poison he's putting in there and how much I would have to do to, okay, like X,
to
Y,
to instantly send this person to the bathroom. How much emetic rat poison do I need to include to make someone go puke out their guts?
Exactly. It's like, well, I could give them activated charcoal for that, but I don't know how quickly would I need to give it to them? How would they survive this? It's weird. I mean, of course, it makes me want like the EMS version of this game, right? Where like, okay, there's a hitman player working, and then there's like the paramedic player working to like revive the person each time, and like they need the right tools. This is just me being me. I'm enjoying the game quite a bit. I think it's a lot of fun. Of course, it's like very immersive simmy in a lot of ways. Maybe a little less so, obviously, than something like Prey. I take a drink. I said the word Prey again. But like, very, very, very fun, very systemic, and I will always be here for the million ways you can do different things and the million ways you can use your different verbs and, like, mess with the
systems.
Yeah,
there was, it's funny, I kind of did the lead-in on this by talking about, like, speaking of mutilation, but one of the things that there was the review of this game, I read it recently from Rick Lane over at The Guardian, actually ends on this notion I think is really interesting. I'm curious what your thoughts on it are. It's a great quote. Rick says, Hitman 2 is a refreshing alternative to the vast open worlds that dominate big-budget gaming, where many games work to put the player in a constant state of distraction, rushing around in an often vain attempt to see everything they offer. Hitman 2 has the confidence to let you stand still, to sample the wine and drink in the atmosphere as you plan your next tiny yet devastating move. Indeed, no other action game encourages players to think about how to minimize their violence, and for that alone, Hitman 2 stands out among the less mindful killing of its peers. Yeah. Curious what your thoughts are on that stuff. Both the, like, you know, a lot of immersive sims are about moving through empty spaces and about just like, hey, this world's empty already, everyone's dead, or like there's like seven people alive and you'll see them eventually, picking through their remains, you know, on the way. Hitman is about, like, being in a places that are hyperactive, like, filled with citizens, regular civilians, just, like, walking around, and you don't have access to who they are or what they're doing there outside of, like, oh, yeah, I guess they're here to see a race. Okay, yeah, I guess they're here to shop. But then also that idea of, like, it ties into what you were saying before. This is not a game in which once you pull your gun out and start shooting that you can erase that by going to hide somewhere, really. Like, you can kind of, like, again, you can change disguises or whatever, but, like, it is not a thing that you can de-escalate quickly, and so every little bit of violence, you really have to know that you're ready to commit.
Yeah, absolutely. And the funny thing about that, hearing that quote, I was actually playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey while this loaded. Like, yeah. You know, I spent another hour in, you know, Xena World, just running around and fucking around, because I'm not doing anything of note in that game. I really am just using it as my playground while other games, like, load or download or whatever. So, going into this, that was incredibly, incredibly relevant to me. Like, oh, even the way 47 moves is so deliberate. It is so specific. Like, even sort of the decision to, like, run while crouching feels very, very deliberate and very, very...
Compared to Cassandra, who is just, like, all fucking elbows. Just, like, yeah, just jumping everywhere. Just, yeah, I didn't even ride the
horse in that game. I just sprint up mountains and throw her off the side of the mountain, and she's fine. Right, everything's fine.
I was just... I'm in another chat with some friends of mine, and I was just talking about this because there was a conversation about how much... we were talking about games that... open world games this year and, like, the feeling of, like... whether or not they hate you or not, I guess, is the best way to talk about it.
Yes.
With on one end, one extreme is the... the Assassin's Creed games were like, you're basically going in and out of combat, no big deal, just fucking people up and jumping off of cliffs, and it's nothing, right? Or Spider-Man, I think, is similar. And the other end of it is like Red Dead, where that is a game that constantly is just like, you're the heaviest thing in the world. Your horse slipped and you tripped, and now you're fucking dead, you idiot. Your guns are breaking. Everything is falling apart constantly. The friends who I was talking to about it were very much like on the side of the Assassin's Creeds and the Spider-Mans. And in talking through it, I hit this analogy, which is that for me, games like Spider-Man and Assassin's Creed want to give you the fantasy of being able to jump off a building and hit the ground and keep running. And that's, I'm not dissing that fantasy. It's just not my fantasy. Games like Red Dead want you to jump off the cliff and splat on the ground and then, like, chide you for having had the poor controls or the bad thought to have leapt off a building in the first place. The fantasy I want from my games is to be falling from a building to be in danger of hitting the ground and dying, and then at the last minute to, you know, grab onto something and swing away.
Yeah.
The last minute to avert that danger. But I need that danger to feel just extremely real, and Hitman 2 does that for me super well. Again, disclosure, close friends with one of the writers on the game. But, like, that's what I want for my games. And in general, I will err towards putting my character in risk, putting my playthrough at risk, you know, putting myself in risk, because then at least, even if it feels unfair at times, which Red Dead definitely does at times, I will have that feeling of there's a chance, there's a feeling that maybe I can pull out, you know, get away from the danger. And that is something that a lot of games just don't give me. Even stuff like God of War this year is a game that I enjoyed the combat in a lot. But outside of those Valkyrie fights, I never felt in danger. I either was fighting a fight I knew I couldn't win because I was out-leveled, or I was fighting a fight that I could win, and it wouldn't be a big deal. I love it when games put me in that gray area, or put me in that blurry area. It's like, ooh, can I pull this one off? Again, we were talking about Battletech earlier. My favorite parts of that game are, like, I'm being pushed to my limits. That is my fucking favorite thing in games, from you know, board games to tabletop role-playing games to video games to sports, is, like, I'm an Eagles fan, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I want what happened to the Eagles this past weekend, where they are down going into the second half and they fucking pull it off. And that is the feeling. I've been raised on that feeling. And partially, and I don't think this is a rare thing, like, underdog stories are the fucking law of the land in Hollywood. This is not a rare thing, right? Like, throughout comic books, throughout mythology, throughout popular fiction, the underdog is the overdog, right? Like, that is not, or of course. But in games, we don't get that often, or what we do is we get a very linear progression where it goes from, like, you go from being weak to then being able to be strong later. You come back to where you were weak. You're like, yo, fuck you. I have a flaming sword now, motherfucker. I'm going to kill all these goblins who used to give me
MSDP
trouble.
MSDP, like Dark Souls, right? Like, is that that's totally a game that understands. It accomplishes both, right? Like the Souls series.
Yes.
When you go back to an area that you've sort of mastered the mental map of, where it's like, oh, I know where to go. I know what I'm doing. I'm going to avoid the obvious mm-hmm. dangers that fucked me up before. Like, that is rewarding your observation, like the time investment. But at the same time, like, when you get cocky at any moment, one of those little goblins can fuck you up. But also, like, the existence of the bosses is always a check on you. Like, you are never...
Yeah.
I mean, there are ways you can fuck with the power curve. You play Demon's Souls, you use magic, you can kind of break the game in half. Yeah. But, like generally, those games are structured in a way where they're going to reward you for, like, the along a curve that is rewarding and you are better at it. But it always is going to put a check on you that, like, challenges you in some way that, like... reminds you that, like, who's actually in control here. And that's part of the huge appeal of the game, is that there's, oh, the moment you feel like, oh, I've got it, the game's like moves the goalpost back
out.
five yards.
Totally. My favorite you go ahead.
I was gonna posit a spectrum here of, like, stickiness versus smoothness, and games that are, like, completely smooth, that just completely everything they do is about removing barriers. Assassin's Creed Odyssey is about removing barriers.
100%.
Obviously, there's some combat, there's some checks on things, but, like, the experience of playing it is about being as smooth and slick and just flying through things.
This is the thing that I say in that Red Dead. So I wrote about this in the Red Dead review, right?
Yeah,
or the first Red Dead letter series, which is, like, friction. The thing, one of the best examples in Assassin's Creed is you can be on a horse going full speed and still loot the, like, crafting material. You can literally, like, Cassandra's, like, I guess on a horse going full again. We're going back to poetics and things not being literally representational. But you're fucking riding a horse nonstop, hyper fast, and it's like, give me those fucking trees. I gotta put these in my backpack. I gotta craft a boat thing with this. And just, like, grabbing it. In the Red Dead world, you'd have to stop your horse, slowly get off your horse, go over to a tree. You can't even do this with trees, but, you know, the equivalent. Kneel down. We'd get a button prompt thing where Arthur has to pull out a hacksaw and slowly start to saw away the tree. It would be this incredibly, what do you say, it's sticky, right? Like this, though you'd zoom in on that, there'd be no smoothness to it at all. I think that spectrum is exactly right. Or is one spectrum,
it's
right?
It's one way it's of not, looking at it. Yeah, there's a million, of course, ways
totally.
Of looking at it.
And I think Hitman 2 is nicely in the middle there somewhere, right?
It's fairly sticky. I would call it fairly sticky.
Fairly sticky. Put it on the back of the box. Daniel Riendo, fairly sticky.
Sticky game.
Put it in the next trailer, the accolades. Hitman 2, Io, when you put out the accolades trailer, please include fairly sticky Daniel Riendo, waypoint.
With a big thumbs up. I also it, though, as a way of, like, it sticks in your head, too, right?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
That
totally.
Might be more memorable, even if it is, like, more annoying on some levels,
that
right?
That is,
like,
I mean, think back to where we talked about me bouncing off of Fortnite, where I was like, well, the problem with Fortnite for me is I can't tell a good story about getting into a fucking bunny hopping shotgun fight at the end of the game. And that it's the same, like, it's that same thing. It is. It's like the stickier it is, maybe not the stickier it is, but there's a sweet sticky spot
thumbs up,
sweet sticky spot where I can tell, I can narrativize the thing that happened where it actually does change from being poetics into being kind of fiction into prose, where it's like, okay, now I can actually tell you the specific instances of what the gameplay did in this moment, and I can give you the Austin Walker 8-minute long monologue about this one horse ride I went on where I ran into a guy and blah 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 blah. And that is when games really hit their sweet spot for me, is when I can start to narrativize them. And in general, that happens when it feels like my gameplay experience felt unique because of the introduction of stickiness and friction, where that is the mech with the one arm is all fucked up, or the guy falls off his horse in Red Dead, and then I end up being chased by the cops because I bumped into somebody, and then blah, 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 blah. Like, that stuff ends up being my favorite stuff, whereas I feel like with something like Assassin's Creed Odyssey, I suspect your experience with that game and my experience with that game are going to be fairly similar outside of character build and the order that we took certain missions in, you know? And I suspect that's actually probably true also for Red Dead, but in the moment of playing or for Hitman, like, I bet you everybody does the same six Hitman, like, story opportunities, story missions, or whatever, the things where you're like, okay, I'm going to kill this person with this special, unique way that's built into this level. I bet you a lot of people do those same ones, but in the moment, it still feels like it's my story, because you end up doing the, like, well, and then what happened was, you know, the stage tech almost walked in as I was choking this guy out, but then, you know, thankfully they didn't see me in the mirror, so I blah, 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 whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Video games.
Not
that's
all
what
the
I
way
have
sticky.
To say.
Yeah, right.
Not all the go. Way sticky. Not all the way. For some video games, not all the way sticky. Anything else before we wrap up? Patrick, I have down iOS
Golf
Game.
Oh, yeah, I just want to quickly shout out. This will take 30 seconds. There's a game called Golf Peaks. It is on, at least on iOS. I'm not sure it's on Android. And it's also on Steam. Like, the short version of it is it's like a like mini golf with cards.
Okay.
It's not deck building, so you're not like creating. You know, you're not like pulling like the different moves you like to use. But it's the way it's golf, mini golf, sort of with but you're also like able to hit it in the air. With it's they're puzzles, so it, like, just breaks down like trying to get to a certain hole. Into these different cards you can play. So like you can have one that like hits it in the. It's all divided into grid, so it's like you have a card that's hit the ball three spaces forward. You have one that's like hit the it can skip two spaces and then go one after that. And right. So you have different cars that you know give you different maneuvers, and then you use that to solve like these like small grid puzzles. It's delightful. I managed to like blast through it in like way too fast, like in an hour and a half. Except with the exception of some of the sort of last handful of advanced challenges, but it's like $3 and it's just like a really delightful game. And like I'm as someone that enjoys it's weird because it's like as someone that plays a fair amount of golf, it like it's the one it's what you wish golf was, which is that if I just have to do this and then if the ball just goes exactly where I know where it needs to go, it'll do it. But then the other half of it is the physical part of actually executing that maneuver. So it's fun to play a game where I can take out the part that I constantly fuck up, which is the actually swinging of the iron. So
right, you can just do the puzzle solving. It looks almost, it reminds me in some way of the Hitman Go.
Yeah, like, yeah, 100%. Yeah, it is. Go it, yeah, like bit. Taking, yeah, abstracting like the mechanics of the thing into a turn-based affair, which card. Is, yeah, the hallmark of the Go games. This does that for golf, and it's, yeah, it's super cool. Yeah, Golf cool. Peaks.
Last little thing for me is I checked in on No Man's Sky's new update. No Man's Sky has continued. No Man's Sky Next came out this year, and we were like, oh, wow, cool. That's a cool thing. I wonder what they'll do next year. And the answer is they'll do two other big content updates this year ahead of the end of the year. So they did one around Halloween called Abyss, I think, which was like all about underwater stuff, and I did not even get into that stuff. That stuff seemed really fucking cool. Like new giant underwater creatures and all sorts of new like sunken wrecks and a new submarine thing, almost like something out of Subnautica. But then last week in time just for Thanksgiving, they released Visions, which changed, which like new skyboxes and like weird like atmospheric effects.
Fireworks. I saw there were fireworks.
Fireworks.
Nice.
New like more like rainbows. And a bunch of other stuff that's just, like, cool. Archaeology. Like, you can find, like, ancient alien dinosaur bones now.
All right.
And that's cool
that
as
could
hell.
Be a way that you could be, like, instead of killing stuff or whatever, or instead on top of being it, you know, Pokemon Snap style, being a researcher who goes around, like, and takes pictures, you can now start digging up old bones. All sorts of other cool stuff there. And I logged in enough to be like, man, I really like this game. And also to do, so they do big community events now, which they added just after Next launched. And I don't know if this just for this new update or if this has been happening with all these community events, but you kind of get a call from one of the NPCs in the game, Polo, who is the little Gek researcher who's on that special ship that shows up every now and then. Polo gives you like coordinates to a portal, and you take the portal and the portal takes you to a portal is like a on the it's like a Stargate or something on one of the nearby planets, and you can take that to a special system where there are a bunch of other player characters. It brings everyone together to work on a specific goal in a specific system for the next week or whatever. And it was such a cool experience to walk through this portal and then be beset by, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of these little communication devices that had been left behind that all say things like Guten Tag or like, hey from Hawaii. Yeah. And like, oh, really cool. Like, there's all these other people who are here. And there's a base that someone has built on this planet that like is a great starting spot for us to all start working on this community challenge together. I forget what the community challenge was because I only did it for a little bit. But I think it was like, you know, okay, we need 1,000 scans of unique life forms across this whole system or whatever it is. And so, like, as you do that, you end up unlocking community rewards, like new helmets and, you know, new aesthetic rewards, new emotes. That's how you got the fireworks. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, if you get through all of the tiers as a group, you'll unlock the fireworks for everybody. It's a really cool little thing. So I'm excited to continue to check in on that as the year wraps up. It is so, especially in the wake of something like Fallout 76, it's so good to remember that, like, I can be really frustrated with a game at launch, which I wasn't with No Man's Sky, but I am with Fallout 76, and hold on to hope that, like, a year and a half from now, that could be a game that's really good. You know?
Yeah.
I can step away from it now, let the people who are enjoying it enjoy it, and for me, you know, wonder and hope that over the course of time they can confront some of the things that I really dislike and maybe iterate on them until there's something a little more in my taste. We'll see. We'll see. All right. I think that is going to do it for us today. Thank you for hanging out with us for this pretty long episode of Waypoint Radio.
As always, you can find...
Yeah, exactly. I think this is a pretty sticky episode.
I think Waypoint so, Radio. Too.
You know, I don't technically need to go eat lunch, but you guys are doing a good job of fucking ruining it.
Making sure you just have nothing. You don't want to eat anything today. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Danielle?
At Danielle R.I.
And how about you, Patrick?
At Patrick Klopik.
Follow everything Waypoint does at twitter.com/waypoint. Shout out to Kato for producing this. You follow Kato at @a_Kato_appears. As always, you can find the song for this. Wow, I need that lunch now, Patrick.
You need your lunch, man.
Shout out to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Panel Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. And as one more reminder, we are doing Mark of the Ninja for the Waypoint 101. There was a great form thread up over on the forums. Shout outs to RoboWitch for setting that up. And shout outs to the users on the forums who are already having lots of great conversations. So go check that out. We're hoping to have that in for the second to last week of December or the last week somewhere in there. So get through that. It's about 10 hours long. And again, it's on just about every platform. And hey, maybe by the time you hear this, there will be some like Cyber Monday deals still happening. So you can grab it at a reasonable price. All right, everybody. That's going to do it for us this week. Or not this week. We'll be back later this week with even more stuff. The First Purge. Go listen to The First Purge. That episode will go up of Be Good and Rewatch It later this week. So go watch The First Purge.
The movie, Purge The Fourth 1. Purge. The First
the
Purge.
Movie, the Fourth Purge. Called The First Purge. All right, everybody. That's going to do it for us. Peace.
Be good. Be good at it. Watch The First Purge.
Watch The First Purge. Peace.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.